Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 415, which is the prefix for my kid's school. Anytime I get a phone number from 415, I'm like, what did they do? What did they do?
Sorry if this is bringing back some traumatic memories.
They're still current. Let me finish the rest of it. This is the box office report for the week ending September 30th, 2018. That could be our earliest tangent ever.
Yeah, after you introduce the numbers.
I didn't get through the number of the episode. So, well, before we get too far, let's all introduce ourselves.
This is Dan.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. We are Joe-less. There's a delicious irony in the fact.
Joe-less Shoe Jackson?
Yes. That the movie this week will be a good old-fashioned slasher flick.
A horror romp.
A good old-fashioned horror flick?
I'm using the phrase good old-fashioned.
Yeah. Oh, okay, because I was going to say.
I'm not critiquing the film.
If you were writing the log line in the 60s or early 70s, it would be a good old-fashioned horror romp. Yeah. Right?
Sure.
Yeah. People would say, and they'd be reading the newspaper,
yeah,
and they'd look at the show times. And it'd be at two theaters, and it'd be, you know, about five times that you could see it.
Right.
And they'd be like, well, we should go see that.
I like a good romp.
The newspaper said it was good.
As a Monkees fan, whenever I hear romp, that is what they would refer to, what we would now refer to as the music video portion of an episode of the Monkees. Mm-hmm. Those were referred to as romps. Yeah. So
I didn't ever know that.
Yeah. Well, So sometimes within the monkey fandom, it still gets referred to as a romp, like when they would stop the show and there would basically be what we would now call a music video. Hmm. So when you say that, I instantly now I'm picturing people.
It's a monkey trigger word.
Slicing people's throats to Daydream Believer.
That could actually, be pretty creepy, like a slowed down version.
Oh, yeah. It'll only give it time. To get around to it.
Now, how does a romp compare to a rumpus?
Oh, that's just a rumpus is a little rough. You don't want to.
Yeah. Okay.
A rumpus is rough and rowdy.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what we like. So the TV show were romps, but in the movie Head, that was a rumpus.
I remember that episode. We talked about it. How could I forget that movie?
It's funny. It's hard to forget, but it's also extremely difficult to remember.
No, that's true. I mean, I remember the experience. Now, I couldn't tell you what the hell they did.
Yeah, because there's nothing to glob onto from like a narrative.
They don't connect, right?
No.
It just bounces around a weird,
But I like the movie because it completely sort of undermines changes the perspective of the series.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of like a stoner deconstruction of what they had done.
If you watch the series and then you watch Head, and especially Peter Tork's part, it's like, wow, that totally kind of changes, completely changes his persona.
Yeah. And the goal was they were going to do the movie and then they were going to come back and do a third season, but it was going to be a variety show. They were gonna you got to remember, variety shows were all.
I know, they were huge. Everybody had one.
Yeah, and that they, and then that way they could bring in their musical guests that they liked, and they could, and they could do sketches. I think it could have worked.
You know, honestly, I overstood my because
1969.
I think they would have brought in some. I mean, you know, they had Frank Zappa on, and
right
to have them. You know, I could see them bringing in Mothers of Invention and being like, what? Look. Two words, or three technically, Shields and Yarnell. If they could have a variety show.
Right. And but you know where I was going,
they were mimes.
Yeah.
Oh.
There was,
they also had Dancing Water.
There was, honest
mimes
to God,
had a variety show?
A network television show based around mimes. I saw Shields and Yarnell. They came to the Fox. And I wondered, one day I was like, whatever happened to them?
Yeah.
And
they kept calling them, and they couldn't hear anything on the other
end.
I don't know
which is the guy, because it was a guy and a girl. They were married, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
They're not anymore. But the guy ended up running Ringling Brothers Clown School.
Ugh.
But that makes sense.
Ugh. <That's> clowns.
You don't like clowns.
Hey, clowns. No, I'm not weirded out by scary clowns.
The nice ones.
They're just not funny.
No, it's the whole uncanny valley. So, clowns, they've always bothered me because you see the painted face, but you always see the face underneath, and the face underneath is never matching that whole.
That's true. Right. You can see through the makeup. It's like you've got a regular mouth and a big curve.
But yet you like Kiss.
Yeah, but they weren't they were trying to be
scary.
Okay,
they were trying to be a little scary.
Were trying to do that versus clowns where they're doing all this stuff and and they're not smiling at all.
Right.
You know? And to me that even as a kid I was
Well, look at Ronald McDonald. That is just creepy. He is awful. You look at that and he tries to smile and be happy in those commercials and you're like, that is a creepy it level, you know.
Bozo.
Was it Willard Scott was the first Ronald McDonald?
He was a Ronald McDonald.
And he was a bozo. He invented it, basically.
He was both.
Oh.
He did invent it. And it looked like it because he just looked like he stuck bunch of French frying cups on his head.
If you see early pictures of Ronald McDonald, he's got a food box on his head. He doesn't look what you envision now.
He looks like drunk Willard Scott was in his bozo makeup and went to McDonald's and was like, I can be your mascot. Watch. Ta-da!
Whereas now he's got those childbearing hips. What is that about? Ronald McDonald's hips are way...
Oh, because the pants are baggy?
But their hips, they're not just baggy. Oh.
Some clowns have that thing where they're pants, they have a hula hoop or something on their...
Well, for Ronald, it was Grimace.
Maraca that.
Well, if he's gonna Grimace, you're doing it wrong. That's no means no. Yeah. Have the congressional hearings taught us nothing? And the answer is no. They have not.
Keep your calendars, Ronald.
So, shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. We don't have a new review. We haven't had a new review for a while. I think everyone who listens must have written a review.
They must have.
We've got 40.
Guess we'll have to go to Rock Dog next episode.
We've
so
already done
someone,
it.
I know,
you
but...
You need a new threat.
Oh, that's true.
You need to figure this out. You're a parent. You're supposed to know. You can't, you've already burned that bridge. You need a new threat.
I thought maybe they would forget.
They never forget. They never forget.
Veggie Tales. You could do a Veggie Tales.
Oh, all the Veggie Tales parodies. Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. My son Brian, he's 14 now, but he stumbled on.
You told this story.
Did I?
Because he didn't know they were religious.
He didn't know they were religious.
Oh, no.
He thought they were saying dad instead of God. Yeah. And I was like, I'm not going to stop him from watching this. And everything's dad's perfect. Dad knows everything. Dad sees every bad
Praise
thing you do.
Praise our Lord and Savior, Dad.
Right. I'm like, sign me up. So you can also join the League of Show Sharers at facebook.com/realspoilers. People who were kind enough to share the show this week, Travis Tewitt, Tammy Sherman Powers, Dustin at Nerds at Night Gaming, Vincent Dafalos.
Oh, man.
If this helps,
yeah.
Junior.
Oh, wow. Come back. Keep going.
You need a second?
Yeah.
Okay. Susan Carlson, Tom Comiskey, Ralph Tribble. Are you ready?
No.
Brad Hyen, Troy Anspaugh, Ron Johnson. Anything?
Nothing yet.
Chris Sanders, Brent Smith, Chris Magic Man, Chris DeLay, Librarian Cynthia. We're getting dangerously close to the end, Dan. Jason Wiese, Timmy Tuzoons, Julianne Jordan. Anything? Richard Lawson, Griffin Fox Smith. Time's up. We need a song. Would you like to hear the name again? It's like a spelling bee. Could you use his name in a sentence? What's his name?
Vincent Davalos Jr.
I hope I'm saying that. It's with a V. Davalos. Davalos, I think is how you say
Davalos.
It.
Davalos?
Yeah. I looked at his, on his Facebook page, he did the pronunciation thing. So I think it's Davalos. Davalos. I think it's Davalos.
Oh, man.
Are you sure? Is that your final answer?
That's final answer.
Okay. Dun, dun.
Oh, man. Okay. I got out. This is going to be terrible. So,
He's like, why did I ever start doing this?
I don't know. Davalos Jr.
Yeah.
All right. I'm just, for some reason, all I've got is Dawkins Dream Warriors in my head.
What's wrong with that?
all I remember is, we're the Dream Warriors.
That's all you need to remember.
That's all. We've got Davalos Jr.
We'll take it. Right, we'll let you off the
that's
hook.
That's all I got. Hey, we got Dawkins.
Yeah, you got. You're rocking with Dawkins, man.
Yeah.
No shame in that.
Breaking the chains, bud.
Yeah.
Welcome, Vincent. Sorry, you got a third-rate dock and knockoff, which is already pretty
yeah, I'm like, that's pretty dark, far down the food chain of the hair bands.
We just watched, for research, we just watched the Breaking the Chains video.
What could you possibly have been researching?
It's for something we're possibly going to shoot coming soon. And then it was one of the people that joined my team, and so she had not seen a lot of these videos from that era. So then it was like, well, sit on down. We're gonna we watched that. We watched. We started with Whitesnake,
right?
And when you watch these now, you're just like, what?
Yeah,
is happening? But break.
Why is she on the hood of that car?
Oh yeah. You know,
got to show her when the Goo Goo Dolls were a hair band.
Oh, yeah.
They did a song for Nightmare.
Yeah.
Nightmare on Elm Street movie. Yeah.
Well, it always bothered me because they started out punk. Then they were a hair band. And then that stupid Iris song came out. And
yeah.
I was like, I'm out.
I always referred to that when I was in radio as the Johnny Resnick conundrum. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you do when the thing you're good at isn't the thing that you love? Like, I got to think they love punk and even maybe metal, but then they turned out to be he turned out to be good at writing these kind of like adult alternative sappy ballads, and they made him a lot of money, but like, I don't think it's his first love, and I'm like, what do you do there?
Steer into the curve.
Yeah.
We know how it happened. They kept with that.
So, totally, but yeah. It's just,
it's tough, but you got to pay the bills, and I guess you try to be successful, and that's why a lot of people sell out, so to speak. They go, oh, look, they sold out. But it's like the dream is to be popular as a band and get your music heard. And then when it finally is, it's like, well, we're not going to go back to what didn't make us popular.
Right.
So
like
it's tough.
He built a career, makes a living doing that stuff. The same thing happened to Sugar Ray.
Oh, yeah.
Sugar Ray was like, they were hard when they first came out.
Yeah.
And then if you buy that album that has Fly on it, the only song that sounds like Fly is Fly.
It's Fly.
Like, nothing else on that record sounds like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Or Smash Mouth. No, they were always terrible.
Yeah. But just in different ways.
Remember those days when All-Star was everywhere?
Oh, my God. I'm so glad it's not.
It still kind of, pops up, except for I always feel like I, went through a portal to the 90s. Oh, no.
And even when All-Star became this huge hit, if you go back and you view it in real time, we were all like, they had a second hit?
Yeah.
Like, as they were having the second hit, we're like, how are they having a second hit?
What was their second hit?
All-Star was their second hit.
Oh, what was their first hit?
Walking on the Sun.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That song was massive.
That's true.
Huge.
Huge.
And other than those two songs, all their other, hits are covers.
Yeah.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, I mean.
Yes, they are.
Why Can't We Be Friends?
Yep.
Oh, that's true.
That's and war.
Was war, yeah. And then they destroyed a Monkey song.
Which one? They didn't even believe.
I'm a believer.
I'm a believer.
Yeah.
And then they did Steppenwolf's. Is it Steppenwolf? Or no? Question mark and Mysterians. Can't get enough of you, baby.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah, they did that one too.
Oh, this is bringing back like traumatic flashbacks. I'm just listening. I can hear that guy's voice in my head. You know, that's really like, man, I saw her face. Oh, yeah. I'm like,
he kissed me.
Yeah.
What?
The lead singer, Smash Mouth, kissed me.
Excuse me? They can't bury the lead there.
We've done so many of these. I'm like, have I told this story?
I don't remember that story.
No, this is the most we've ever talked about Smash Mouth since the 90s.
That's fair. So when I was working at The Point, which is an alternative rock station in St. Louis, I was a part-timer, and Smash Mouth was doing an in-store appearance at Streetside Records.
Nice.
And they sent me out to introduce the band. Because
that's a top job.
Well, and it also fell the weekend of the Point's float trip. So all the important staff.
Oh yeah, you were.
Were off of the float trip, and
you weren't partying on the float trip.
No. Plus, I'm like, I'm not going on a float trip. Who are we kidding? Like, I wanted to work there full time, but not bad enough to go on a float trip. and so they're like, oh, you can do this, and I was like, okay. So I drive the van out to Streetside. And Smash Mouth at this point, I don't even know if we had officially started playing the song.
Oh.
Like, they were nothing. There was maybe 30 people at the Streetside. And they were going to do a little show. And so, you know, play like three songs and then sign stuff and leave. And so I'm up there introducing the band. I'm like, hey, I'm Tom from The Point. Not that Tom. There were two other guys named Tom that worked at The Point. So,
well, you're not Thom. You're Tom.
And I was the least important of them. So whenever I would introduce myself, it would always be like, no, not that Tom. And not that one either. Sorry. So, and so like I'm introducing them. And as I'm introducing them, like I feel someone's hands like wrap around me. Like I'm getting spooned. And I'm like, what is happening? And then he like has his head like up against my, and he kisses me on the neck, and I'm like,
wow,
and I'm like, here's Smash Mouth.
So if he runs for office someday, you will be,
he will, I can
testify.
I can promise you that the lead singer of Smash Mouth will never be on the Supreme Court.
No.
That is my promise to you.
No.
You can guarantee that?
I can guarantee
they've
that.
They've got some pretty legendary fumbles on many of their corporate gigs. That
Do they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's one that was pretty epic. Mm. And actually, Sam Foxman, I think, a local producer, is the one who actually had to work on that because I read it in a mag. I was like, it was like in Spin or something, and they like, you know, they fell into this thing where they started doing corporate gigs. And so when you fall into corporate gigs, that's when
that's
you know
money.
It's like
it's great money.
It's
but
great money,
you're
but
done.
You're officially done,
right?
And, unless you're doing like a Microsoft corporate gig or an Anheuser-Busch
this
corporate
might have been
gig
for like Enterprise or something,
right?
Yeah. And he was like belligerent and drunk.
Yeah,
and they're like, hey, why is he so mean? Yeah. It, like, they weren't there. Like, he wasn't there. And the band's like, where is he?
Yeah, you can't really do a Smash Mouth show without him. But he had, and I don't know when this fell in the room, but, like, he, like, lost a baby, didn't he? Like,
it might have been before or, well, it was around then.
Yeah, they had a young child, like, a very young child, and they lost it. Like, it died. And he went through a really weird stretch.
Those were the days.
Oh, the crazy 90s.
Wow.
So, well,
tub thumping.
Yeah. Oh, don't eat. Oh, no.
I like that song. I will take that song a million times over Smash Mouth.
No, not me.
Absolutely.
I'll take Smash Mouth over tub thumping.
Really?
Yeah. And that you know, that's another band that's like that. Like, that band was like this really, like, agate prop.
They
like,
were, were they nihilists or are they anarchists? I think they were anarchists.
I think they were anarchists.
They had like 11 albums. They had tons and tons.
And like in Europe, they were touring with Rammstein. Like that's
oh, wow.
Yeah. And then
they do this one little
catchy ditty, and like that's all they're known for.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they're like the epitome of the one-hit wonder as far as people are concerned. I didn't realize they had anything else.
And a lot of that's because their hit, again, sounds nothing like anything else they've ever done. So, Well, that's probably enough of that. We should turn our eyes to the box office. Kevin has his abacus at the ready. Kevin?
I do, Tom. And coming in at number one is one of the new movies that I don't think it's been out for 69 weeks, but our box office software says it has. So that's an odd one. But Night School in its opening weekend is estimated to bring in $26 million. So that's the Tiffany Haddish and Kevin Hart comedy. You saw it?
Yes.
And what's your verdict? I've been hearing nothing but bad things.
I mean, I guess if you like Kevin Hart, it is a Kevin Hart movie.
But the trailer, the humor seems so stupid. Like,
well, in its defense, the actual humor in the movie is stupid.
Yeah.
So...
in its defense, it lives up to
right.
Its,
like,
so it's not a bait and switch.
They were very upfront. In fact, it might even be stupider.
Because right. I mean, Kevin Hart's funny, and I enjoyed him in Jumanji and his stand up stuff. Like, I think he's funny, but that trailer just looks asinine. Like, as soon as you said, like, oh, that's opening next week, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. But
I feel like Tiffany Haddish must have became kind of like. Were they filming this as she became a big deal? Because there are like scenes where she's full on Tiffany Haddishing up the joint. Mm. And then there are scenes where she's just kind of playing it like straight.
I don't know the production history on it.
And it's from the director of Girls Trip.
Okay.
So,
well then that's not that old. So I mean, and she was popular then or, you know, getting,
but I mean like Girls Trip made her like,
that was, yeah, very much during
she broke through.
Yeah, that was a breakout role for her. And so, like, I wonder if he cast her off a Girl's Trip, but...
It hadn't quite come out.
Yeah, and then when that movie, and she's the breakout star, they were like, okay, then start doing your thing. Mm-hmm. Work that in, you know? Because, like I said, there are scenes where she's totally doing that, and there are scenes where she's not. And so it just makes me wonder if...
Tonally, it just seems so strange, too, because, like, they're doing the whole school thing, and, yeah, you've got all these... students that have to take these night courses or whatnot, and then like she's like in an MMA ring with Kevin Hart, and I'm like, that seemed like tonally, like, I didn't understand what type of movie they're making.
Dude, I saw the movie and I didn't understand that scene. Like,
that's so far fetched. Like, that it was like, okay, is it a movie that's just like things happen that are totally unrealistic in it? Yeah. Because that
scene in the movie makes no sense. Like, I mean, there's some sort of like he has a type of dyslexia, which I'm surprised people aren't complaining about his character having dyslexia because of how they present it. Because they show him, like, literally, like, things are jumping off the page and he's swiping at them. And I'm like, well, that's not dyslexia. That's a psychotic break. Like, that's not how...
So they visualize it, like, in a stylistic
manner?
Right,
but then it's not just, like, the letters getting jumbled. It's like they're literally flying off the page and he's, like, swatting them away.
It's like, is that beautiful mind?
Yeah, I was going to say, they're, like, beautiful, like, I mean, because with dyslexia, you just switch words, right?
Right, or letters,
You don't go... You don't go crazy. You just read things with jumbled.
Yeah. Words. So I'm surprised nobody's complaining about that. Yeah. But like, and then so the MMA boxing scene, which I know it's not boxing, but I don't care enough to.
Right.
It's mixed martial arts.
It's
a little bit.
So there's some boxing. Yeah. Kickboxing, Sport of the Future. Maybe you heard of it. Some of its stars include Don the Dragon Wilson. It's some gibberish about, like, oh, it's gonna help your neural pathways respond to blibbity blah. I don't know. It was dumb.
And she just happens to be an expert martial artist,
which they had never referenced at any point in the movie.
She's a teacher, but she just happens to be able to do all these. She's like flipping them around and doing arm bars and whatever. Right. Like, okay.
And then, like, literally in the second to the last scene of the movie, where all of a sudden it's like, oh, are they supposed to be getting together? And then she's like, no, I'm gay. And it's never referenced again or after. It was just like,
okay,
what?
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, I'm sorry. It's not interesting. That's surprising. Okay. Well, anyway, $26 million, and I think the budget was close. Yeah, $29 million. No overseas take yet. But, I mean, it's going to make money. It's already in its opening weekend, made about the budget.
Right.
So, you know, it's going to be okay. It will do its thing. Number two, Smallfoot, another movie opening this week. That's the animated one starring Channing Tatum, I think, is the main voice. And it's like a reverse, like, it's how Bigfoot views humans as opposed to him being the monster. It's like, oh, my God, all these little humans are the monsters. And I take it you didn't see that.
I did not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair to middling reviews. It's not horrible. People aren't saying it's great, but, like, it's entertaining. It's getting, like, 6-7 out of 10-ish, so... I didn't see it, but it's supposedly pretty entertaining. Take the kids to, and some good jokes and whatnot. But anyway, that made $23 million. I do not have a budget on that one, nor do I have overseas yet, but animated movies fare pretty well over there. So when it does get a release, I'm sure it will make a ton of money. Number three is The House with a Clock in Its Walls, though, in its second week in release. So another $12.5 million for that one. It's a 53% drop. I'm guessing Smallfoot stole some of its money there, especially as we get closer to Halloween. You know, so good timing for Smallfoot to steal some of that kids' money away. But about $45 million on that one domestic, another 10 overseas. So $55 million on a $42 million budget. So it's making money, and I mean, I think it was entertaining. You saw that one too, right?
Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah, it's a fine, you know, it's a little slow, but, you know, it's interesting things, funny. I mean, my nine-year-old loved it, so I recommend for kids, like, is there something you can take a kid that age to that they won't be bored? There's a lot to look at and stuff, and he had a great time. So, I mean, it is a good kids movie if you don't want to see Smallfoot or have already seen it or whatever. So, and I think we talked about the fact that the horror element, like, it's a PG movie
but some very disturbing images without being a kids movie,
without being violent, right? But it's still like weird and disturbing, but not in a gross, so it's interesting.
I mean, wish there had been more of that.
Eli Roth directing a PG
he did
movie.
It?
Eli Roth.
I had no idea.
And there are some very like odd and creepy images at the towards the end that, again, are entirely family-friendly, but are still very unsettling.
Okay.
So, like, hat tip for that alone. Yeah. For that alone, I'm like, you should probably check it out at some point.
So, like, there's a scene in a hostel?
Not quite.
They don't go to a hostel. But... is it a law, though, in kids' movies you have to have poop and fart jokes? Is that just law?
I just think it's they know it'll work.
Yeah, just every time, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's called steered into the curve.
I mean, it's just know your audience, man.
As we age and get older and older, and every movie continues to do that. Like, I mean, that might have been funny in Ace Ventura or whatever for me, but you know.
I don't know how to break it to you. It wasn't a new joke then. It's just you were 12 and it was funny.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, it's like every kids' movie, and you know, one joke, fine, whatever. But when they keep circling back and returning to it and stuff, it's like, okay, come on.
I think the last time I laughed at a poop or fart joke in a movie was probably the first Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Remind me. I know we've talked about it.
It's snowing, and they're eating the ice cream, and somebody's like, they're like, that's not chocolate. And then, like, I think the monkey in the background is eating the chocolate, and he's just like, freaks out and throws it away. So it was a little bit nice. Underplayed, but
And that's, I mean, I respect that a little more when they just sound like, oh, that's not chocolate, as opposed to like in this movie.
Yeah.
And again, the movie was entertaining, but it's one of these things where, like, you know, one of these fake creatures has to poop out a bunch of leaves because it's a garden animal or whatever. So it's, you know, and it's like, oh, come on, it got in my mouth or whatever, you know, and it's like they play it up.
They definitely keep going back to it.
Did Ryan laugh at it?
You know, he was entertained through the whole thing. I don't remember him cracking up at that, but, you know, I didn't hear a ton of laughter from it, but I'm sure the kids, I mean, you know, they like it, so
it works.
Number four, A Simple Favor, the movie that we circled back to last week, so you can catch that episode. We had Paul Harris, friend of the show, returning for that one. It made another $6.8 million, a 34% drop, so word of mouth is strong, as we said.
Because it had only like a 34% drop last week.
Yeah, that's awesome. So people continuing to see it, and everyone that's seen it that I've talked to has loved it. It's a great twist, you know, a new fresh take on that mystery buddy, you know, whatever.
You just don't get a lot of movies like that.
No.
I have heard a lot of people like talk about it, and every time I'm like, what is it?
And it's also, I think it's hard for people to talk about it without ruining it.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people are probably apt to just not attempt to tell you about it.
Yeah,
I think my issue
was
like when I saw the poster art and I was like, it looked like, you know, something that starred Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson.
Yeah, no, it's not that.
It has
that.
But I mean, like, if you look at it, it looks like one of those, like, where he's leaning. Because he can't, you know, all those movies where he could just lean everywhere. And it had, like, the really colorful, like, bold sans serif type. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it looks like one of those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's not a rom-com or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's really good. It really is like a detective noir type thing, except she's not a detective, but she's trying to solve a mystery.
Yeah.
And it's really, but it's directed by Paul Feig, who did Bridesmaid. So it's like, it's got the humor element, but
it's not a flat-out comedy either.
It's got funny elements to it. And
it's very quirky.
definitely,
but not not too much.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they really.
I've had people tell me that. I'm like, I have no idea what this movie is.
Yeah, it's good.
I would say keep it that way and go see it.
Yeah, definitely. Don't look anything up about it before you see it. Number five, The Nun in week four. So that one's still making money. $5.4 million is a 46% drop, $108.9 million. And then we go overseas to the window that I just closed. I went to click on the tab and accidentally closed it. Let's see here. Overseas, it has $205 million. So The Nun, the second spinoff of the Conjuring series.
Yeah, I was like, it just looks like a little, you know.
Yeah, I guess I don't see it quite that much because of how it's like sliced in shards, you know?
And especially since it's not McConaughey, you know? Yeah. Like if it was McConaughey doing that for the 15th time.
I was just like, oh, it's, you know, in the color palette. And I was just like, oh, it's a little more.
Sexy. It's cool. I mean, she's wearing suits and stuff because she works for a fashion designer. So Blake Lively in every scene has a new, like, very fashionable outfit on kind of thing. But anyway, the Nun... $310 million in 4 weeks on a $22 million budget. That is mind-blowing.
Somewhere, I just want to go back in time to the conference room for Hellfest where they're like, you know, if we give The Nun 4 weeks, we should be fine.
Right, because they're like, yeah, clearly.
Yeah. After 4 weeks.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they're probably like, in 6 weeks, we're going to put it on VOD anyway.
Right,
so.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if you've noticed or not, but we're at number five and have not mentioned the movie of the week, and The Nun from week four has just beaten it. But, yeah, $310 million on a 22. So, unbelievable. But, you know, I think that really speaks to what we said on the show about The Nun.
Right.
It got a lot of bad reviews from critics, but all of us, you know, from our critical perspective, we're like, yeah, it accomplished exactly what it set out to do.
Not a thing wrong with the movie.
Yeah. Like,
except for the fact that I don't like those kind of movies. But
if
you did, it was a fine example of
and
it.
People are enjoying it. So, it's one of those cases where, you know, a lot of times, like movies like Transformers, yeah, they make a ton, and we're like, well, that doesn't justify it, even though people like it. But this one, it's like, I feel like it earned every bit of that money.
Yeah.
No problem there. So it will be interesting to see if they do spin it off. You can listen to that episode. But I mean, if they their character choices and their casting actually turns into something,
right?
Or if it's coincidental, or, you know, however, nepotism or whatever you want
right.
to say. I'm curious. So listen to that episode, see the movie if you want, go into that more.
So is that I've not watched any of the Conjuring movies.
Yeah. I've seen the first one.
The actual two Conjuring movies are worth seeing.
Yeah, no, I've heard this, and I want to watch them. I'm
surprised. You know, like, I had just watched The Conjuring 3 weeks ago, but
it's
a horror
one of those
guy.
Things. Well, and I'm like, I'm a selective horror guy. Like, I don't like it. If it's horror, I don't. It's like I gotta watch them all because. Yeah. There's certain ones where it's like, but I also like things that are more like It Follows or The Babadook, and
right.
You know, things that like do something different.
Sure.
So when I saw the con, when it came out, I was like, yeah, you know, I just feel like we've tried that. But you guys, everybody talks about it.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't do anything different. It's just a throwback in an age of gore. It went the other direction and then did it very well.
Which, so I want to see that in the second one. But then there's like, but the doll is part of that. Annabelle,
there's two doll movies.
Two Annabelle movies. Baffling me.
And
is The Nun part of that universe too?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
The Nun is in the second Conjuring movie. So the doll's in the first one.
So
Nun is in the second.
Let me give you an analogy. It's like if you saw Indiana Jones, and then they did a whole series about the little tiki idol that he steals at the beginning. You don't need to see those.
Got it.
To interact with the main franchise at all.
I just wanted to kind of get a lay of the shared universe.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's tangential at best.
Got it.
So see the two Conjuring movies and sleep well at night knowing there is no need to see the other ones.
Got it.
I'm always confused just because you brought up the, you know, these are origin stories. Annabelle is an origin story. Now, this is the origin story for how the Nun
right.
was in the second one we came. We get a lot of discussion about movies that come out that go back into an origin story and how a lot of people are like, I didn't need that origin story. But it's like,
we don't need any story.
Watch it if you want. It's just another story to tell. I don't know. People get so mad now. And I get like not telling Spider-Man for the 17th time. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the origins that have never been told. You know, we get these movies now where Solo just got an origin story and Bumblebee is getting an origin story. We're getting all these and people say, I didn't need an origin. Well, then don't watch it. But like, it is a story to tell. And I don't get offended like when an origin story comes out because I'm like, well, some people maybe do. And you don't have to take it.
If they tell it well, then okay.
Well, and if it's well, yeah, a lot of times if it's good, there's no complaint. But then if people don't think it's going to be good, or if it isn't, yeah, they're like, oh, I didn't need that. But
yeah,
it's very...
Yeah, well, in Solo, I've yet to meet a person who hasn't liked it. So it's, yeah, one of those things. It's like there was such a weird backlash to that.
Yeah. That is one of the ones that recently, obviously, has been the loudest. But people say, "Oh, I didn't need that story." But it's like, okay, but it was a fun story. Yeah. Like we brought it up on the League of Show Sharers, you know, because my friend Jeff, you know, he said, "I just didn't need that, blah blah blah, or whatever." Not trying to rail on him, but he mentioned that. And I go, but I don't understand this. It wasn't necessary. No movies are necessary.
Right.
Well, these are all stories, and there's no law book that says, well, you can only tell this story if it somehow is so important to this plot. Like, no. It's like they chose to tell a story about something that happened to be an origin or something in the past, and you can enjoy it or not, but I'm not going to shut it down because it's like that was not quote-unquote necessary.
Well, the nun, I mean, I remember seeing the character design, and I'm like, oh, that's really creepy.
Yeah.
So that they turned around and said, you know, people really creeped out at that nun. We should make a nun movie. To me, that's as far as they need to go to warrant making the movie.
Yeah. I think it was actually the other way around. I think it was actually the other way around, though. It wasn't like they... When they put the nun in The Conjuring, they were already planning on spinning it off.
Well,
like,
see,
were they? I don't remember.
I'm almost positive that's the way that played out.
Well, because I look at it as like, that's really good character design.
Right.
And, you know, something like, that's something you're going to see in haunted houses. That's something that Universal will probably pick up on it, you know, and license. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you've seen, I'm sure, that painting where it's like a painting, but then the eyes glow or like turn to real eyes. Or we're like, that is a creepy.
It is creepy.
Creepy imagery, yeah. No,
you know,
no.
So when something like that happens, it's like, I don't see why not, especially if they can make a decent movie. Look, how many Freddy movies they made, and really only like two were decent. One was great and breakthrough. And then that sort of new nightmare thing, which was a sort of a revisionist view of that, but otherwise the rest of them were terrible.
Yeah. Talk
they
about necessary on horror, for horror especially. Because I just watched Halloween 2 and it was okay, but like Halloween's excellent, and then I think like my chronology already is going to be like Halloween 1978, Halloween 2018. Like I don't need to watch all that other stuff. I'll do Halloween and then 40 years later find out what's going on with them. But like, you know, I've seen two, I've seen three.
I thought the new Halloween, like, takes place like the Halloween 3 through Infinity didn't happen.
Right. Well, it's Halloween 2 through whatever. They're eliminating 2.
Oh, they're eliminating 2
because
as well?
Because there's characters that die in 2 that are going to be alive. In this
I thought they were keeping 1 and 2 and getting rid of everything
because
else.
Because 2 starts exactly after 1.
Yeah, no, yeah, totally.
But there's stuff that happens and characters, things happen to them where I think they're going to still be alive in some capacity.
Okay.
So it's really just Halloween, and then obviously Rob Zombie's a different universe. That's
sure,
a remake.
Yeah.
So I just, after 2, I told Joe, I'm like, I don't think I'm going to even watch 4th, 5, 6, whatever. I'm like, I don't need to see all that. I want to see this new one. That first one is amazing. I just watched Halloween for the first time.
It's amazing.
Maybe I saw it when I was a kid but didn't appreciate it. But like, for all intents and purposes, I just watched it. The camera work, how ominous that character is. And it's the suspension suspense building. But the camera work by Dean Cundey, the cinematography. So I was blown away by the first one. And then, you know, so I watched 3 first.
Just take, if you lop 3 off, it's a much better movie. Just take the 3.
Yeah.
And it would be like, but as soon as it's associated with that.
Right. So I did it in all sorts of weird orders.
Yeah, you did.
But yeah. But go listen to the Patreon show. Mm-hmm. This week, Joe and I review Halloween 2, which, like I said, takes place the same night of Halloween as the first one. It's a continuation. So anyway, there you go. Happy Halloween. Number 6. Hellfest, the movie of the week.
Here we are.
$5 million on a This one was $5.5 million budget. So, I mean, you know, they did they did the low budget thing. They took a page out
that
of the
Blumhouse. Seems a little high. It seems kind of high, but okay.
Right. Like, is this the number for Six Flags? Can we get your park for a night?
Right.
I'll tell you, it's a night shoot. That's expensive. Because from a crew standpoint,
right,
and light rentals, lights are expensive.
There were lots of people in it.
Yeah,
there were a lot. You know, like lots of extras to make the.
Oh, there were a lot of free people. I think there was a lot of
and we'll get into that because I have some interesting
interesting things that as far as the people and the crowds, but okay. We'll get into that one. But anyway, so $5 million and a 5.5 budget. I mean, thank goodness it was a low budget. That's all I can say.
Man, it wasn't my money.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll get into that one next episode. Number seven, Crazy Rich Asians, though. Week seven in number seven, $4.2 million, a 34% drop. So it's doing the My Big Fat Greek Wedding formula,
yeah,
type of thing.
It's
where
just chugging.
People just, yeah, keep going to see it. It's a good movie. It deserves it. And so that 34% drop brings it to $165.7 million domestic and another 50 overseas. I'm surprised the foreign number's so low. I don't know if, I mean, it seems like a formula that would translate pretty well. It's a rom-com type of, but I don't know. I guess it's not action. Action translates.
Yeah, I don't
CG
know.
CG translates more. It just seems weird that it's only 50 overseas.
It's probably a pretty unique story. Like if you're in France, you know, do you care about how
an American going
what
to,
an Asian American deals with when returning to Asia?
That's true.
You know,
yeah. Because I mean, it's looking at the foreign. I mean, it's rolled out in a lot of countries, but just yeah. But anyway, either way, $30 million budget. So they're very happy with it. Obviously, it's doing quite well. So
and Awkwafina's going to host SNL. First Asian, I can't remember if it's first Asian actress or first Asian to host SNL in 18 years.
Oh, wow. Do you know who the last one was?
Lucy Liu, I believe.
Lucy Liu, really?
Wow.
And that was 18 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's amazing how long ago that, like, she was a big thing, like around the Charlie's Angels.
Yeah. There was a period where they thought she was going to be a big deal.
She was in a lot of movies. Yeah. Back then. So anyway, but yeah,
Bill, I know Bill Murray's a huge fan. Do you hear about that?
No.
Bill Murray and Lucy Liu on the set of Charlie's Angels.
Oh.
I know he hated making that movie.
Yeah.
But he didn't hate hanging out with Lucy Liu.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. There's a famous like speech he gave, like he walked in and it was Drew Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, and Lucy Liu. Maybe it happened, maybe it didn't. But the urban legend is, like, he walks in and he looks at Drew Barrymore. Or he looks at Cameron Diaz. He goes, you can halfway act. He looks at Drew Barrymore, and she produced it. He goes, I get why you're here. And then he looked at Lucy Liu. He's like, but why are you here?
Oh. Okay.
Wow.
Huh.
And that set the tone for, like, how their relationship
I
the rest of the
imagine
movie.
Bill Murray. That seems kind of weird that he would say that.
Yeah.
Unless he was trying to joke in some weird way and it was taken. Like, I just can't.
It's weird because it's eerily reminiscent of what Chevy Chase said to him when they first met.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds like a Chevy Chase thing. When you said it, I was thinking, but like Bill Murray doesn't seem, I mean, he seems like a pretty cool
guy. Like, I think his best dig is from that SNL book.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. I wonder if they like added to that.
They have.
Oh,
they have.
I'll have to read it again.
It was just on sale. I picked it up on Kindle. It was on sale for like $2 the other day, and
yeah,
I signed it.
They should just continue to do that.
Is it a Bill Murray book or SNL book?
It's an SNL, SNL book. The oral, like, history, oral history. Of SNL, and it is
Incredible.
It's great.
But there's one dig, and I don't know who it's directed at, but Bill Murray refers to somebody as one of my like favorite insults, because it's just, I think it's worse than anything you'd say, is he calls somebody a medium talent. Which to me seems like to say somebody's no talent versus like calling somebody medium talent. It's like, oh, that's even,
yeah, because like
nastier.
Because like no talent, you're just like, oh, you're just saying mean stuff to say mean stuff.
Yeah.
But medium talent is like acknowledging you have some skill, but you're just not at everyone else's level.
That good.
Wow.
And it's like, God, that seems so much worse. I love it.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, interesting. But Crazy Rich Asians, over $200 million on that $20 million budget. So, or $30 million budget.
Oh, and if you haven't heard the story, supposedly when Chevy Chase first met Bill Murray, he asked Bill Murray to show him exactly where it was Neil Armstrong landed on his face.
Oh, wow. Yikes.
And that set the tone.
Jesus. Yeah.
Like they like legit got in a fist fight as they were going on air live.
Yeah.
Like they're like counting down 4, 3
and
they're punching each other, and then they're like 2 and they both stop and they walk out on camera and they do their thing.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Chevy Chase. I mean, he seems like such an asshole, and I don't think that's like it seems like that.
No,
like,
he is.
That pops up a lot.
There was just a big feature in the Washington Post about him.
Yeah.
About how he wants to work and no one will hire
him. It was an interview with him, and it was supposed to be, I think it was supposed to be kind of a rehab article, and he was still a jerk.
And he said SNL's not funny.
Right.
Whatever.
Chevy Chase is the Mike Love of SNL.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And who's Mike Love?
From the Beach Boys.
Oh, okay.
He is the Mike Love. Mike Love is this, you know, he's still a lot of people, that's who they think of when they think of the Beach Boys. Right. That's who they think they love. They think it is bestowed a lot of the credit.
Right.
But and he's not a good absolute person. A-hole. Wow.
And it's Brian Wilson is the...
And he's unpleasant and bitter, and he's still like, in interviews, he's still like, even when it's like an interview, like in Rolling Stone a couple years ago, they had an interview with Mike Love, and it's like, it's supposed to be like his redemption, and he comes up here and is like, I still hate him. I hate him more.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and he's that.
Yeah. Chevy Chase needs to just go away, because he's not doing himself any favors in these interviews. And like, you saw Pete Davidson, just like, screw you. He's a racist piece of crap. You know, and Donald Glover has plenty to say about, you know, working with him on Community. And he just seems like an awful person. And he used to be so funny back in the day. Like,
he was funny, but he was an awful person.
Our definition of funny also, like,
has shifted.
Yeah,
that's true.
Like, he just had to, you know, fall into a Christmas tree a lot. And, you know.
I like Fletch.
I don't know. I'd have to rewatch those. I don't know if they would hold up.
I think Fletch holds up pretty well. I watched it a year or two ago.
Yeah, but like him and Caddyshack, he's like kind of the one. If you watch Caddyshack now, he's one of the most annoying parts of Caddyshack.
Here's how, when Chevy Chase works in a film, how they make it work, not counting Vacation, because he plays a very different character in Vacation than you normally see as a Chevy Chase role.
Sure.
But if you think about it, when Chevy Chase works in a movie, the classic Chevy Chase films, he's a dick, but he's surrounded by bigger dicks, and so you don't mind. So when he's in Caddyshack, he's a dick, but he's at a country club, and it's all like really like they're elitist pricks, and they're racists, and they're snobs.
You get why he's acting the way he is.
And they're mean to everybody, and so when he's one of them, but he's mean back to them,
you know,
it's funny. Mm-hmm. And Fletch... You know, he's the smartest guy in the room, and he's trying to solve the murder, and everybody's trying to stop him, and he has this grander purpose, right? And so it's funny, but when it's just him in regular life being like that to people, it's not funny.
Not
so fun.
Yeah. Number 8, The Predator. That's our movie from 2 weeks ago. $3.6 million, $47 million domestic. I don't know if, I mean, that's falling quickly, and we've got more and more of the Halloween type stuff coming out. So I don't know if they released that a little too early, or maybe that was the only chance they had, but not getting the reviews. And you can go listen to that episode from 2 weeks ago. I don't remember. Okay, we did have a budget, $88 million on that one. So $47 million domestic, and overseas it has $58 million. So $103 million on the $88 million. I mean, it's slowly getting some money back, but it's not... Now rebooting the franchise like they want it to, and they set this up for a sequel. And
absolutely.
I think this is probably their last, I mean, at least for a while, this is their last stab. They've tried to reboot this already just a few years ago, and now they're doing it again, and they need to let this thing kind of...
There's a movie where, a franchise where they have a really cool character, we talk about character design, and they keep trying to like bring it back because it's cool, and it looks cool, and then you're like, but... Yeah. Like that last one, I was like, wasn't that Rodriguez?
Yeah.
Predators?
With Adrian Brody?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I thought it was better than this. This new one is.
Yeah. Well, and this one, everybody went in like, well, Shane Black.
Right. And that was the thing. It's like, this should have brought it back to the roots of the first one. It's like, it is Shane Black who, you know, doctored the first script and was in it. Like, this should be great. And it just was weird. Go listen to that episode. It's not, it's a disappointment for sure. Coming in at number 9, White Boy Rick with another $2.6 million. That's a 46% drop, almost $22 million on that one. And, none of us ended up seeing it. I mean, I'll probably end up seeing it just because I wanted to, but it's disappointing that they were setting it up for, like, the Oscar buzz, and no one's, it's not that caliber, no one's talking about
it. If it's an Oscar buzz movie in September, it ain't gonna win.
That's true. I guess that's why they dropped it early. Yeah. So, like, we better just get it out. But anyway, it had a $29 million budget, so it's up to 22, but, you know, it's about to leave the top 10, so I unfortunately think that one's going away soon here. And rounding out the top 10 is Peppermint. Peppermint is now up to $33.5 million domestic, $6 million foreign. So it's around the $40 million worldwide mark at a $25 million budget. So it's made its money back. But Paul Harris loves it. So
yeah, he enjoyed it. So
we talked to him last episode. So Tom thought it was pretty mediocre. Paul loved it. So maybe there's something fun in there.
Perhaps.
But
to each their own.
Exactly. But for now, that will do it for the box office.
Well, thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter, DanGraney67, GRANEY.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. If you want to find the show online, please do so at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, join the League of Show Sharers while you're in front of your internet delivery device. Maybe swing on by iTunes, leave us a rating and a review.
That's an idea.
Yeah, you could even follow us on Twitter at Real Spoiler. So that's it for this one. Coming up on the next one, we will tackle Hellfest. Until then, you've been warned.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.